All right, we are live here with a Schloss Rant Wednesday night, September 27th. Damian Lillard is a member of the Milwaukee Bucks. I was going to lead with football, going to recap week three in the NFL, going to talk about week four in the NFL, but this Dame Lillard trade to Milwaukee trumps anything else that's on the table in the middle of the week with the National Football League right before they're going to kick off the Thursday night game with the Lions and the Packers. So I'm going to give you five or six takes right away from seeing this Dame Lillard trade. And if you don't know the trade, Lillard basically is going to the Bucks. DeAndre Ayton and Drew Holiday are going to the Blazers. The Suns get some cap filler in there as well to kind of make up for trading away DeAndre Ayton to close that salary and make everything aligned. So my first take of this is honestly, because of the fact that Portland is only getting back one first round pick, not until 2029, a pick swap in 2028 and 2030, I view this as almost a salary dump for the Portland Trailblazers. Why? Because they're getting rid of not only Damian Lillard, but also Yusuf Nurkic, who the two of them combined in 2025-2026 season, which I know is a little bit down the road, they're making a total of $77 million, with 58 of those million belonging to and being attached to Dame Lillard. So it almost seems like a salary cap dump. One of the players in the trade who I mentioned earlier, Drew Holiday, when he was traded from the Pellies to the Bucks, he commanded three first-round picks. Dame Lillard is one of the 75 greatest NBA players of all time, if you trust that list. I think that Dwight Howard should have been included over Dame Lillard, but at any rate, he's one of those top 75 players there on that list. So the fact that he's only going in terms of picks, one first rounder plus two pick swaps. I mean, heck, even look at the Rudy Gobert trade, five first round picks. It's not a lot of picks, but if you're Portland, you're able to get off of the huge deal, which who knows if he's going to be injured then, and the ridiculous amount of money he's going to be making, because even the year after that, he's owed a guaranteed $63 million. So the fact that Portland was not able to get a huge haul in terms of future draft picks and draft capital shows me that this might have been just a way of ensuring that you don't have an injured Dame Lillard making between $58 and $63 million over those last two deals, and you've got some assets on your team. The second take, if you're Portland, getting back Ayton and Drew Holiday, it doesn't make a whole heck of a lot of sense to me. And the reason is because if you're looking to rebuild, you're taking back two guys who were in the starting lineup for their respective teams 2 years ago in the NBA Finals. These are, you know, legitimate talents that belong on contending teams, not necessarily rebuilding teams. Is Ayton the best center in the NBA? No, he is not. But is this a guy who came into the league as a rookie and put up like 18 and 10? Yeah, he's a walking double-double machine. He's a solid player. I'm not telling you you're building a team around him to win a championship, but he's a legitimate starting center who, honestly, even his jump shot has developed where I've seen him step out to about 18 feet and knock down jump shots. So the players that Portland's getting back, while they're really good, while they're starters, while they're capable of being starters on teams that are going deep into the playoffs, it doesn't make a whole heck of a lot of sense. And to take back another guard, if you're Portland, the Blazers already have young guards. They got Anthony Simons. They got Shaedon Sharpe. They got Scoot Henderson, the guy who they drafted. And a guy like Simons, who was really, as his volume of three-point shooting has gone up, his percentage has actually gone up a little. I know it dipped down a little last year from 21-22, where he shot over 40%. On about eight attempts. So you've kind of taken away from him if you're not able to flip Drew Holiday for something else, which I think they will do, which leads me to their next take. Drew Holiday should be traded to a contender, probably as soon as possible. And it's not like they signed him, which means they got to hold him until December. He didn't sign a contract with the Blazers. He was already under contract with the Bucks and then got moved. So I think maybe they look to move him to a contender as soon as possible. Who that contender is, I mean, who in the world knows? But I think they move him to a contender. Takeaway number four, and this is the most obvious. The Bucks got the best player in this trade. Dame Lillard, like I said, one of the 75 best players of all time, give or take. I mean, maybe he's 80, maybe he's 85. But this is a bona fide scorer who averaged over 30 points a game last year. We know he can shoot the ball from three. The Bucks got the best player in the deal, so therefore they won the deal. The next takeaway is that Dame Lillard is the perfect type of player to put next to the Greek Freak. Listen, Giannis can do a lot of things on the basketball court. He can defend. He can run the floor. He can put the ball down and get to the rim at will. But the one thing that he can't do, and that he sometimes tries to do, is shoot jump shots. And with Dame, you're getting a really reliable outside shooter, especially from three-pointer. So I think that this is absolutely the right type of player for the Bucks to acquire. And the East is wide open. Miami was a number 8 seed last year and made the finals. Boston, I mean, yeah, they got Tatum. Yeah, they got Jaylen Brown. You like to see what Porzingis is going to do, but Porzingis is an injury prone. And you wonder if the Celtics are going to be able to get over the hump and win a title. We know they're in the finals in 2022 against Golden State, but they have not shown you that they are battle-tested and can win the title. The Bucks have done it in 2021. So I think you're getting the best player. I know you're getting the best player in this deal if you're Milwaukee. So, NBA breaking news, and I was pretty stunned because all the chatter all offseason have been Miami, 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 and then, you know, I think about yesterday, maybe the day before, they're like Toronto, and it's like, it doesn't make any sense for him to go to Toronto. Why would he do that? But I think that this is ultimately a place that makes sense for him to be because he's playing with another superstar. You've got a chance to win a title starting right away. There is no more rebuilding if you're Dame Lillard and the Bucks. But I just don't love what Portland got back. Again, I if you're going to flip Drew Holiday, okay, that makes sense. But do you really need DeAndre Ayton? Again, a good player, a quality starter. But I think for a rebuilding team, I'm just not sure what he does for your team. So, crazy NBA trade. The stars, I mean, they're always moving. They're always getting their way. And I thought that Portland was kind of doing the right thing by playing it slow, but I just expected a haul that made a little more sense. But I think that if the guy doesn't want to be there, I mean, you're in a tricky spot. And I think ultimately, I probably would have a hard time trading away one of the best players in the history of my franchise, debatable whether it's Bill Walton or Clyde Drexler or him, depending on what era you're from, probably. But I would have a hard time trading a guy like this because, to me, I'm just not sure you got any better in the long term if you're Portland. And I don't think you're any better in the short term. I think you just have some mismatching pieces now. All right, now let's shift to football here. And we're going to talk a little bit about, put a, you know, an absolute bow on last week before tomorrow, week four starts. A couple interesting nuggets and things that I've noticed around the league. We're not going to break down every single game here. But last week, 7 of the 8 games, and this is courtesy of Ben Fox, 7 of the 8 games that had 70% of the bets, not the money, but 70% of the bets on one particular team, all of which happened to be favorites, all ended up with those teams, or seven of the eight ended up with those teams covering. You look at like the Patriots -2.5, all the way up to the Chiefs -12.5. The one team that did not come through for you there was the Cowboys laying the 12.5, and that's because the Arizona Cardinals were able to win the game outright at home. So to give you the rest of the list, we already mentioned the Chiefs. We mentioned the Patriots, one covering the 2.5. We also need to take a look at the Dolphins laying the 6, Lions laying 3.5, Eagles laying 5 on Monday night, Bills laying 5.5, and the Seahawks laying 4.5. So all those games, you had at least 70%. All the teams were favored, and the Cowboys were the only one that did not end up covering the number, as they lost outright. Forget about the spread. So this just goes to show you that, and also you, before I get to the kind of the major point about this, is you had the Cardinals, who we mentioned. You also had the Colts and Texans all win outright as 7.5 or more point dogs. So the lesson behind this is you can't just, you know, do the quote unquote fade the public, because in 7 of those 8 games, you would have been wrong if you just faded the public. And with more and more people getting involved, taking a look at these games, you really have to use some level, some combination of data, trends, look at key matchups in the game, and honestly also fade narratives. Like, go against the grain, be a bit of a contrarian, and say, no, I'm not just going to blindly back the Cowboys laying 12.5 against an Arizona team who the game before showed they can move the ball, and the game before that showed they can play solid and tough defense. So you can't just automatically, you know, lay the points without thinking about it. And another reminder is there's no one trend that's really worth following 100% of the time with fidelity. And again, it's okay to take some of these contrarian positions off of some of these trends, meaning like if you see a trend where it's like 9 out of every 12 times this team is favored between 5 and 7 points at home in week 3, I mean, there's more specifics to each one of those things happening. And with 12 games, maybe, and again, we're just making this up, being the sample size, it's not worth backing that 100% of the time. And there are people who are picking these games, putting their picks out there online. And listen, they might have been backing, and this was not me, but they might have been backing the Broncos getting 6.5, and it seemed like all their analytics, all their models, all their projections said that's a smart play. And obviously they end up losing by 50 points, 70-20. Miami being super impressive, but we don't need to get into that. Everyone, you know, has said what they said. We all know that. But they might go the rest of the year, this person, picking games, you know, getting 6 out of every 10 of them right. So it doesn't, all this to say that it doesn't mean that someone is bad at picking these games and analyzing these games if they're wrong in one particular game, even if they're wrong to the tune of 50 points. So don't be afraid to take your own stand, take your own position. Don't blindly follow any trends automatically, and really, you know, fade any type of narratives that are out there that lead people to back certain teams in different spots. An example of this, of fading the narrative, is this week in week 4, and we'll talk a little bit about week 3, but you've got the Bills and the Dolphins opening the total at 49.5. Bills obviously score over 30. Dolphins score 70 last. It's already up to 53.5 from the total. But think about what the narrative. The narrative is, if you're going to play the over in this, you're saying, well, the Dolphins scored 70 on their own. Of course, these two teams are going to be able to get to over 49.5 and now over 53.5. Look, if this is me and this is not an official play in the 5 games that we give out every week, I'm going the under, and I'm waiting here until a minute before kickoff to see if I can get this number maybe up to 55, maybe up to 56. Who knows? because the Dolphins were the story. I mean, even people who weren't football fans probably got some type of notification. Dolphins hang 70 points on the Denver Broncos. So if you're playing this game here, even with it being 53.5 now and you're looking to go over, you're thinking to yourself, well, 28-27, and I win the game with the Dolphins scoring 70 alone last week. Every matchup in the NFL from week to week is entirely different. A lot of football is really in the minutia. Does one team have a left guard that can block the other team's dominant three technique defensive tackle? Does the other team have a linebacker that blitzes a certain way or crashes a gap a certain way, even when the left guard is pulling away from the play? It's little things like that. Can you exploit and create big plays on the football field? So you can't just look at it and say, all right, Miami hung 70 last week. Well, it should be pretty easy for them and the Dolphins to go over 49.5 or 53.5, whatever you were looking at the game. So again, this game might go over. I might be totally wrong, but it's okay to fade the narrative, but at least you're doing it with having the idea of I'm going to wait until this number gets as high as possible. And then if I'm going to play the under, I'll take a look at it then, waiting as long as I can, because at least you have a proper plan and you're putting analysis into it and you're not just blindly following the narratives that are out there that Miami is absolutely 100% of the time unstoppable. Tua is unstoppable. I mean, because unfortunately with Tua, he's very injury prone. That could bring the game under if he has to go out for a couple series. So don't blindly follow anything. And this reminds me of a time in Super Bowl 50, they opened with Carolina -3. And for me, I was looking to back Denver because of 2 years ago where Denver was actually the stout offensive team. Carolina in this spot, you know, 15-1 that year with Cam Newton, no one was stopping them. But I wanted to back the number one defense because of the beatdown that the Seahawks had put on the Broncos when the Broncos were really more the offensive dominant team with Peyton Manning. And you wait till right before kickoff, and all of a sudden, you're getting 6 or 6.5 with the best defense. Peyton Manning comes in, shows that despite all of his injuries that year, he was able to competently lead the offense down the field. I think they got a field goal right away. And I said, this should be easy for Denver. And it was. They weren't going away, let alone needing the 6 to 6.5. I mean, it wasn't a blowout. Carolina had a little bit of a chance at the end, but you were good knowing you were getting the 6 to 6.5 to kind of cushion. And then Denver obviously won that Super Bowl, and they haven't been back to the playoffs since. So you're confident about your position. You know, you should know most likely how these lines are going to move, whether it's going to go with you or you got to jump in right away. So that's another thing I noticed. Keep that in mind. There's so many people on Twitter, TikTok, podcast, YouTube that are Johnny Come Lately content creators. They haven't been analyzing these games. They haven't taken a look at these games since they were in diapers, and they don't really have much context for much of anything except surface level analysis and picking out trends. Like I mentioned earlier, you know, 9 out of the past 12 times teams between 5.5, 7, whatever it is. So again, do your homework, take a look at trends, but nothing's a lock. And remember, you get to 52.4%, that's break even at -110. You start to get towards 58%, you're looking at double-digit return on your investment. All right, now, more stuff on the field here. Jalen Hurts in that Eagles, rugby play, whatever they're calling it. A lot of complaining going around today on Twitter. I think Chris Sims, we'll get to him in a little bit, he said something about it, how much of an unfair advantage of it. And honestly, this is one of the rare times that I'm going to side with the people saying that this is an unfair advantage and it's a dangerous play. The NFL has done pretty much everything they can to protect their players, whether it be not allowing a certain number of guys on one side of the ball, even when going for an onside kick, whether it be moving the kickoff up to the 25-yard line so there's not returns and not as many big collisions, whether it be no more hitting defenseless receivers and, you know, the clapback block or whatever, no more chop blocking. But here's a situation with the Eagles specifically, because they're the team that seems to be running this the most, where you're putting your quarterback, the $50 million a year man, Jalen Hurts, and he's worth it, you're putting him in a position to get injured. Okay, and I understand it's pretty easy for them to get the 1 yard. It's pretty much almost automatic, but you're putting him in a position to get injured. And the reason the NFL is okay with doing this, despite talking about player safety this, player safety that, no more headhunting, is because it benefits the offense. People aren't watching these games to watch games that are 13-7. They want to see offense. Even though this is an ugly offensive play, it still benefits the offense. And on a slightly related note, the Eagles are picking this play up 93% of the time. They're converting for a first down. Hurts as a starter, and I believe I saw this somewhere, 28 out of his 49 games, he scored a rushing touchdown. That's 57%. So if you're looking at his anytime touchdown score and you're looking on the plus side, this is something to look at very seriously going forward. I mean, don't get cute with it. Don't say first touchdown, but anytime touchdown, it kind of makes sense because if you're looking from an implied probability standpoint, even minus 130 is at 56% when you talk about implied probability. So if he's getting it 57% of the time so far, you have a little bit of value in there, especially if you can get more towards that plus 100 and you know, longer. All right, next takeaway from last week. Myles Garrett. I had this guy as the number two player on the Sauce Rant top five. He had 3.5 sacks. You can't block him. He has the combination of physicality, speed, size, and power. You can't block him. The game plan is affected, even if you're a team like Tennessee who wants to give the ball to Derrick Henry. And the Titans only put up less than 100 yards of offense. So people who question me say, I don't know what I'm talking about. When I put Myles Garrett as the number two best overall player in the NFL, I revert back to what I say every year, specifically what I said when I had Aaron Donald number one is, yes, the quarterbacks are the key to winning the games. Yes, the quarterbacks are amazing. But at the end of the day, if there's a player on the other team who you cannot block, they are deserving of one of these spots. And I put Bosa of the 49ers in there as well, my top five, because again, if pass rush edge players are getting in there in a passing league and disrupting your entire game plan, good luck. That's what Kayvon Thibodeau needs to do a little more of. All right, the Jets and Zach Wilson. We'll try to keep this as brief as possible because this is pretty much the talking point on every aspect of media, TV, radio, podcast, whatever. I was blinded a couple weeks ago by Zach Wilson. I said, look, it's past nine starts, plus throwing the game he stepped in for Rodgers in week one this year. The Jets were 6-4 of those games. I said, what could be so bad? Is he Aaron Rodgers? No, of course not. Who is? But will he give you a chance to win the games? Yeah. He hasn't been competitive. Point blank, he has not been competitive. Number two reason why I was blinded. Chris Sims, and I mentioned him earlier, before the draft in 2021, he said that Zach Wilson had Patrick Mahomes-like qualities, and he said, and I quote directly from his Twitter, credit to Sims, he didn't take it down, quote, it feels like I am watching Mahomes again. So it's okay for me to mess up if guys like Chris Sims, who are among the brightest football minds in America, I'm not just saying that because his dad is Phil Sims, former quarterback of the Giants, genuinely, if you listen to what Chris Sims has to say, he's a pretty smart guy. It's tough to evaluate these quarterbacks, especially when 2021 was kind of that like halfway COVID year, whatever you want to call it, or 2021 draft was kind of that COVID season, the really only one that was affected by college football, where teams like BYU and Coastal Carolina rose to, you know, way more prominence than they ever should have under non-COVID scenarios. So tough to evaluate the quarterbacks. And number three, I said to keep playing him because I didn't really think you had a choice starting in week two. But honestly, there's such a stink around this guy. He was demoted to third string last year. I think that honestly, you're better off trying Boyle. Do you have anything with Timmy Boyle? Probably not. Or Tim Boyle? No, but I think there's just such a stink around Wilson. You remember what happened last year with the Mike White t-shirts? It makes sense to give someone else a shot. Schloss Rant, live, Philadelphia suburbs. Looking forward to week 4 in the National Football League.